World Saviors by Charles Vail. This is the conclusion of his book. The study of the world saviors shows clearly the unity of religions, the similarities in the lives, teachings, symbols, ceremonies, and so forth evidence a common origin. The comparative religionists maintain that the common origin is traceable to a great brotherhood of divine men, which from time to time have sent its members into the outer world to teach and to found new religions. Every religion is at its best as it comes from its founder. The later adherents never improve upon the faith. All religions have their source in the divine wisdom of the brotherhood of perfect men. This brotherhood is a mighty hierarchy of graded order, consisting of various departments which are concerned with the carrying out of God's plan for the evolution of the world. The two chief departments concerned with human evolution are a ruling and a teaching department. At the head of the ruling department stands a mighty being, the king or ruler, who shapes the form of races and guides the outer evolution. At the head of the teaching department stands another mighty being, the priest or world teacher, who gives the various religions to the world, either founding them himself or deputing the work to one of his subordinates. All the great world faiths had their origin in this mighty hierarchy of adepts, who constitute the guardians of the world. The great saviors have always brought the same message to the world. The religions founded by them possess practically the same doctrines, symbols, rites, precepts, while the differences are merely non-essentials. But while all religions have the same essential teachings, each has some particular feature or characteristic upon which emphasis is laid, some principle or quality requisite to the needs of the age and people to whom it was given. Thus, the Hindu emphasizes the immanence of God and the solidarity of man. The Egyptian and Buddhist, knowledge. The Persian, purity. The Greek, beauty. The Roman, law. The Hebrew, righteousness. The Christian, self-sacrifice. The Mohammedan, the divine unity, and so forth. Each teacher put the message in the way best suited to the people to whom he came, and emphasized the quality most needed at the time of his coming. Each religion has thus its own mission in the world, suited to the nation to whom it was given, and to the type of civilization it was designed to mold. The chief reason for the appearance of the great world teachers at certain times is to give a fresh impulse when a new civilization is to be born. India, Egypt, Persia, Greece, and so forth are illustrations. Each is built upon a religious foundation. When the Western civilization, the Teutonic, was about to be born, Christ came and gave the religion upon which it was to be built. The new sub-race, strong and vigorous, with the practical side of the mind more developed than the metaphysical, required a training suited to its characteristics. Hence, comparatively little of subtle metaphysics was publicly given, but much of the ethical and practical, the deeper knowledge being given only in the mysteries of Jesus. Each religion is thus suited to the type of mind to be developed, the type of the particular subrace to whom it is given. All recognize that we are living today in a transitional age. Changes most vital and significant are taking place. We see the formation of a new subrace and the preparation for a new civilization. Shall this movement be accompanied by the appearance of a great world teacher? Such would be the teaching of analogy. A world teacher has come to each subrace in turn, and such an appearance again would not be an anomaly. The parallelism between Europe, America, and ancient Rome has often been pointed out. The Celtic subrace was reaching the culmination of its power when the great teacher came. the Teutonic subrace is today nearing its culmination. Again, as Rome was visited by those who brought with them the mysteries of the Egyptian and the esoteric systems and occult schools of the Far East, so today, Europe and America are invaded by similar movements, the latest of which is the Baha'i cult. Then, the abounding worldliness, the loss of religious zeal, and the decay of faith among the people, religion having too feeble an expression to attract the masses, is a condition that immediately precedes the coming of a world teacher. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, whenever there is decay of righteousness, O Bharta, and there is exaltation of unrighteousness, then I myself come forth for the protection of the good, for the destruction of the evildoers, for the sake of finally establishing righteousness. I am born from age to age. The time would again seem ripe for the appearance of such a teacher and the establishment of a new covenant and ideal. Along many lines of thought and activity, the old methods are being outgrown. In science and art and economics, there is need of a new departure. The present economic system has reached the limit of its usefulness. Further progress cannot be made without a social reconstruction. Competition must give way to cooperation. The old order is rapidly breaking down. The social unrest, the degradation of the masses, the class war, and the inability of the captains of industry to keep production continuous evidence an impending change. Surely a new civilization is near at hand. The coming of a great teacher and savior at such a critical period would be in line historically with the succession of world teachers in the past. Is history again repeating itself? Will a great teacher appear again? This is what we would logically expect. But the appearance of such a world savior today would not necessarily result in the formation of a new religion, although such would undoubtedly be the outcome. The tendency today is toward unity, and the re-proclamation of the great truths of the wisdom would naturally lead to a recognition of the unity of all religions. The words of Christ may yet be fulfilled. Other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and shall follow me, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. The new note struck would thus be one of cooperation and unity. The sounding of this harmonious chord would strengthen the subordinate notes in each world faith, until each re-echoed the chord in all its fullness. The keynote of each religion is valuable, and the coming unity would synthesize all into one grand chord, giving to each note thereof equal prominence. The light of Vyasa, the knowledge of Buddha, purity of Zoroaster, the beauty of Orpheus, the self-sacrifice of Christ, and so forth, would form a mighty harmony for the uplift of the world. The coming of a great teacher is again needed, and who shall say that in response to the call, he may not come, even in our own generation, and speak the word that shall realize on earth the brotherhood of religions. The shaping of a universal religion would include all the great world's faiths as cults within itself, each distinct religion being a branch on the one tree of life. A universal religion does not mean that the methods and traditions peculiar to the temperament of each will be destroyed. The world's religious evolution can best be carried on, for the present at least, along the distinctive lines already established. No esoteric religion is perfect. Each has something to teach and something to learn. And the same is true of the various types of civilization. Outside of religion, there is much the East can learn of the West, And inside religion, there is much the West can learn of the East. For instance, the East is in need of the science and mechanical power of the West, and the West is in need of the great spiritual philosophy of the East. Much has already been done by this exchange. India, especially by her sublime religious thought, is spiritualizing the Western world. The many Eastern mystic and occult schools in America and Europe constitute a vital religious impulse, not antagonistic to Christianity, but supplementary. For the Eastern teaching comes not to destroy, but to fulfill. The ancient wisdom of the East has rescued thousands in the West from materialism and restored to them a lost religious faith. On the other hand, the carrying of medical and scientific knowledge to the Oriental people is most beneficial. However, it would be a mistake to westernize the East. Such an attempt would not mean progress. The new forms must be adapted to the old ideals. Let us remember, then, that while we are loyal to our own form of faith, we need not deprecate the other forms which God has given for the guidance of the world. We do not detract from Jesus by honoring the other sons of God. They are all brothers. He is not less divine because they are divine. To suppose that God for thousands of years has left his children in darkness, giving them no special light until 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, and then confining his revelation to a few people inhabiting a territory no larger than the state of New York, is absurd. Such a theory is contradicted by the great teachers and mighty literature that long preceded the Christian era. God is no partialist. Krishna and Gautama, Zoroaster and Hermes, have been as truly saviors to the Eastern world as Jesus has been to the Western. And many times, it is merely a difference of name, the great world teacher being reverenced under different titles by different races of men. The modern world is growing more liberal and tolerant. The author of the Gospel in Pagan Religions says, "We do not deny that the church is the visible kingdom of salvation on the earth, but we contend that there are divine and saving elements outside the church, even in the great pagan religions of the past and of the present day." The same thought is expressed by the Hindu Vivekananda. "The same light shines through all colors, and in the heart of everything the same truth reigns. The Lord has declared to the Hindu in his incarnation as Krishna, 'I am in every religion as the thread through a string of pearls, and wherever thou seest extraordinary holiness and extraordinary power rising and purifying humanity, know ye that I am there.'" Comparative study has compelled us to recognize many world saviors and admit that the religions founded by them have produced great, noble, spiritual types of men and women. But many are still unaware of this fact and are living in utter ignorance that a new era has dawned. They are still trying to keep up the spirit of dissension, narrowness, and bigotry. Such are the modern Pharisees who glory in their vain egotism, ignorance, and self-conceit. The following story was told by the Hindu just quoted. "A frog lived in a well. It had lived there for a long time. It was born there and brought up there, and yet was a little, small frog. One day a frog that lived in the sea came and fell into the well. 'Whence are you from?' 'I am from the sea.' 'The sea? How big is that? Is it as big as my well?' And he took a leap from one side of the well to the other. 'My friend,' says the frog of the sea, 'how do you compare the sea with your little well?' Then the frog took another leap and asked, 'Is your sea so big?' What nonsense you speak to compare the sea with your well. Well then, said the frog of the well, nothing can be bigger than my well. There can be nothing bigger than this. This fellow is a liar, so turn him out. That has been the difficulty all the while. I am a Hindu. I am sitting in my own little well and thinking that the whole world is my little well. The Christian sits in his little well and thinks that the whole world is his well. The Mohammedan sits in his little well and thinks that is the whole world. Let us broaden our view. God has never left himself without witnesses in the world. We must not think that the Father of the human race has selected a few of his children for divine favor, while the great mass are left in ignorance and fear. Religion is eternal and universal. Its outward forms may change and differ in Jewish, Hindu, Parsi, and Christian, but its heart, its essence, is the same in all. Under all external differences, there is an inner unity, the one spirit shining out in every religion. All religions lead to God. The Supreme, speaking through the Hindu savior Krishna, declares, mankind comes to me along many roads, and on whatever road a man approaches me, on that road do I welcome him, for all roads are mine. This broader view will greatly strengthen the faith of each in his own special religion. In the mouth of many witnesses, say the Christian scriptures, shall the truth be established. The fact that the other great religions of the world bear witness to the spiritual ideals contained in our scriptures places these inspirations upon a firmer basis. It cannot be that all the great and noble men in all ages have been deceived. If these inspirations were exceptional or confined merely to one man or people, we might possibly think of them as hallucinations. But when these things are proclaimed in every age and country, we are convinced of their truthfulness. The very universality and uniformity of the teaching is an evidence of its validity.